a hemispherical cyst in the planet. They stood in the opening, 5 meters up on the wall of the cyst. Clusters of glowing crystals sprouted from the walls and floor, the source of the ambient light. Hundreds of lilacs milled about on the floor of the cyst, all of them tending what Vader assumed to be the queen of the colony, a lilac with a bloated abdomen 3 times the size of the rest. Large, gray, leathery-looking sacs adhered to the walls in clumps of 10 or 20 here and there. Egg sacs. A dozen or more tunnel openings dotted the walls and ceiling, all of them about the same size as that in which the 4 men stood. For a moment, no one spoke, and the only sound in the tunnel was the labored breathing of the guards and Vader's respirator. The Queen Lilac noticed them then. She swung her huge head in their direction, fixed her eyes on them, and hissed in alarm, the sound bouncing off the walls of the cavern echoing. The rest of the lilacs in the cavern turned toward them too, their movement causing a collective clicking. They hissed as one, their tentacles squirming in agitation. Down the tunnel behind the men, the pursuing lilacs continued to close.
"And now we know to where we were being herded,"
the Emperor said. Vader turned to Deez and the captain.
"You two are to hold as long as you can here."
The captain stiffened.
"We will stay with our Emperor."
"Do as Lord Vader commands,"
the Emperor said. "What are you going to do then?" Deez asked, while he and the captain took grenades in hand, activated them, and waited for the pursuing lilacs to appear.
"We're going to kill them all,"
Vader said, igniting his lightsaber. The Emperor cackled, drew his own lightsaber, and activated the red blade. Chapter 15. Phelan called back from the cockpit.
"Callan's almost in range. And got him."
Callan's voice sounded over Cham's and Isval's comm.
"Cham, I found the Emperor shuttle."
"Where are you?" Cham asked, instinctively looking out the viewport of the escort boat, though he could see nothing but night. A pause then.
"I'm on the ground near it. Listen, I know..."
Cham cursed.
"I told you, surveillance only, Callan."
"Scan showed no life, so..."
"No life?
Bodies?" After too long a pause, Cham added. "I can't see you, Callan. So if you're nodding or shaking your head..."
"Right, right. Yes, there are 3 bodies, and one of them is a royal guard. Which means they were here, Cham. The remains of a camp are here, too."
"A camp? Callan, they could come back. I want you to get on your ship and..."
"The remains of a camp, I said. And if they were anywhere near here, they'd have heard my ship and come back already. They're gone, Cham, and I think you need to get Gaul down here."
Cham felt his skin warm and his leku perk up. "You think they're on foot in the forest?"
"Gaul will have to confirm, but I think so. If a ship had picked them up, they'd have taken the guard's body, wouldn't they? And I don't see a sign of anything big landing nearby anyway. I'm not the tracker, of course, but..."
"But you think they're on foot? Remember that I can't see you nodding."
"Yes, I think they're on foot."
Cham barely managed to hold in a grin. Isval did not. She grinned fiercely and nodded.
"We're coming down, Callan," Cham said. "Stay put."
"I mean it."
Isval reached out and squeezed his shoulder.
"They're on foot, Cham. We'll catch them. We will."
The narrow confines of the boat did not allow her room for her habitual pacing, so she just shifted from foot to foot.
"They can't have gone far. They don't know the terrain. They could be wounded from the crash. Slow."
"Or not," Cham said, trying to curb her eagerness, though he felt it himself.
"Set us down near Callan, Phelan."
Isval stopped fidgeting and looked Cham in the eyes, an expression of concern on her face. She put a hand on his shoulder.
Are you all right? Really all right?
He nodded to reassure her.
I'm fine. Let's do what we came to do.
She looked skeptical, but nodded in return and left him to take a seat next to Gaul. Cham watched her go, regretting his earlier words to her. He'd changed her with them. Unlike him, she had never had much of a life outside of the movement. He hadn't appreciated how much she needed it, how much she needed him. He'd vented his own concerns, and in doing so, had undermined her foundation. He should have kept his damn mouth shut. Isfal sat beside Gaul, tiny beside his bulk. He smelled of sweat and oiled metal.
How much of that did you hear?
She asked softly.
I heard they're on foot.
That's not what I mean.
I make it a point not to listen.
He said, staring straight ahead. She put a hand on his forearm. His flesh was lined with veins.
How much?
He shrugged the mountains of his shoulders.
Enough.
She nodded, sat quietly for a moment, then said,
He's wrong. The movement isn't just an idea. It's also him.
I know, Gaul said.
She put out a fist.
Nothing happens to him then, agreed? We're going to need to rebuild after today, and for that, we'll need him.
He sniffed, then tapped her tiny fist with the calloused boulder of his own.
Agreed. And how about nothing happens to any of us?
You think you can track them?
She asked.
Vader, I mean.
I can, he said.
Even in the dark?
He turned and looked at her with an expression that told her to stop asking stupid questions.
Good. Good.
Phelan's voice came over the ship's communicator.
We're here. Setting down.
Phelan lowered the escort boat through the forest's canopy, tree limbs scraping the hull, and set it down on the surface.
Stay here,
Cham said to Phelan.
Keep a scan live. Let me know if you pick up anything.
Gaul ordered his crew to stay aboard the escort for the moment to minimize foot traffic near the campsite while he did his initial tracking. Then he, Cham, and Isfal debarked into the humidity of the equatorial forest. Insects buzzed and clicked. Animals in the trees squeaked, bellowed, and squealed. Callan was waiting for them in the clearing, hands crossed over his ample belly, a grin on his face. The wreckage of an Imperial shuttle, still intact, lay in the clearing.
Camp is there,
he said to Gaul, jerking a thumb over his shoulder at some debris, the remains of a fire, and the shredded material of an all-climate tent.
I haven't walked near it. Good, Gaul said. Bodies? Inside the ship. Haven't touched them either.
Just looked inside, but didn't enter.
Good,
Gaul repeated. All business. Isfal walked over to the wreck with Cham, Gaul, and Callan. Gaul was looking at the ground, the ship, the trees, and Isfal could only imagine that he was drawing conclusions she couldn't. The shuttle lay on its side, sunk half a meter into the churned-up loam of the forest floor. A splintered tree limb had speared the cockpit glass. The hull was blackened from blaster fire and blistered from the heat of what Isfal assumed to be a barely controlled re-entry. Pieces of destroyed equipment lay scattered on the ground near the ship. Gaul picked up a few fragments, walked a bit, picked up a few more.
A generator and a portable comm array,
he said, dropping a piece of metal.
Destroyed in the crash?
Cham asked. Gaul looked up at the night sky, then at the ground of the clearing. Slowly he walked toward the edge of the forest, stopping now and again to examine one of the holes in the turf. At last he turned to answer Cham's question.
I don't think so. These holes aren't from a ship's blasters. Nordon?
Could be, Cham said. Nordon caught Vader and the Emperor in the clearing and fired on them. Makes sense. Except the part about how Vader and the Emperor brought them down,
Isfal said, to which Cham didn't respond.
Let me check the bodies, Gaul said.
We need to be quick, Cham reminded him. They have a sizable head start.
Right.
Cham, Callan, and Isval watched as Gaul climbed up the side of the ship and disappeared through a hole that appeared to have been cut through the bulkhead. While they waited, Isval looked out at the dark wall of the forest, knowing that Vader was out there somewhere, hoping that she could get to him before Imperial troops did. Finally, Gaul lifted himself out of the wreckage.
Bodies are two pilots and a royal guard. Pilots died from blunt injuries, probably in the crash. The guard died from a blaster shot to the head. Let me see if I can find a trail. I've got two vessels on scan, Belcour said, checking the recon ship's sensors. No, make that three, though they're all grounded. The recon ship had such a keen sensor array compared with other ships that Belcour knew the vessels he'd picked up could not have seen him on their own scans.
Morse could have picked up another ship,
Offham said in an excited voice.
Sir, I can get two of the V-wings here quickly. We take Morse out now. Maybe we end this whole thing quickly.
Hang on, Belcour said, eyeing the readout in the heads-up display. He frowned.
Offham was gazing at the data, too.
That's an Imperial escort and some kind of native transport. The third ship is an Imperial shuttle, heavily damaged.
He frowned.
That doesn't make sense.
It made sense to Belcour, of course. It was Cham or Cham's people. It had to be. Offham looked over at him, eyes wide.
Sir, that could be Morse with the free Ryloth traitors she conspired with. I'll get the V-wings en route.
He reached for the comm button, but Belcour stayed his hand.
Let's get a better look first, Lieutenant.
But sir, if they pick us up on their scans...
A better look, Offham, Belcour said firmly. We have to be sure.
Aye, sir.
Offham flew the recon craft at low altitude, virtually scraping the forest canopy below. As they closed, Belcour felt his skin warm. Sweat leaked down his sides, damp and clammy. He could smell his own stink. His heart was pounding. He knew what he might have to do, but the doing would come hard.
Staying low, sir. That ought to keep us off their scans for a bit.
Belcour nodded but couldn't bring himself to speak. He waited until his craft was close enough to the group on the ground to overcome the jamming signal polluting the airwaves.
I don't think they can see us yet, sir.
Offham said unnecessarily, but no doubt instinctively, speaking in a whisper.
They're on the ground. They may not even have an active scan going.
Belcour took the encrypted comm link from his pocket and hailed Cham, half hoping he'd get no answer. Gaul started near the camp, using a dim red light that wouldn't destroy his night vision while he studied the ground for signs. He carefully walked the area around and near the camp, sometimes looking off into the trees. Finally, he stood, nodded, and looked over at Cham.
I have them,
he said, and gestured with the block of his chin.
That way. Four of them.
You're sure?
Isval asked, and received a withering glare in response.
He's sure, Cham said.
He gave a start when he felt the buzz of the encrypted comm link he carried in his pocket. He took it in hand, stared at it as if it were a foreign thing.
What is it?
Isval asked.
Isn't that...
Belcour.
How?
He shrugged, then raised Phelan on his normal comm link.
Anything on scan?
All's quiet, Cham.
Not so much, Cham thought, and answered Belcour's hail. Cham's voice carried out of the encrypted comlink.
Belcour, where are you? I don't have anything on scan.
Belcour ignored the Twi'lek and put on a show for Offham, who could hear only Belcour's half of the conversation.
This is Colonel Belcour Dre. You are to power down your ships immediately and surrender all aboard.
What are you talking about? If this is...
A wise decision.
Belcour said, and cut the connection. He put the comlink back in his pocket. To Ophem, he said, I'll take the stick.
Sir?
Oh, of course, sir.
Ophem transferred control of the ship to Belcour.
What is that?
Belcour asked, gesturing to nothing at all outside the bubble of the cockpit.
What is what, sir?
Ophem turned to look out on Ryloth's night.
I don't see anything.
There's nothing on scan.
Belcour drew his blaster pistol in a sweaty fist and shot Ophem in the back of the head. Gore splattered the glass of the bubble. For a moment, Belcour felt dizzy and thought he might vomit, but he held it down. He looked away from the blood, cursing, rationalizing, apologizing. His encrypted comlink buzzed in his pocket. He gathered himself before answering the hail.
I'm in the air, Syndulla. 10 clicks south of your position.
How'd you find us? Why can't I see you on scan?
Too long a story. You can't see me because I'm in a recon bubble.
That's the Emperor's shuttle? Tell me there are bodies aboard.
There are, but not Vader or the Emperor. They struck out on foot.
How do you know that?
We know.
Belcour quieted the connection and cursed loud and long as he looked down on the unending expanse of equatorial forest stretching out in all directions. If Vader and the Emperor were on foot, finding them would be nearly impossible.
We're tracking them,
Cham added. Belcour pressed the button on the comlink so hard it made his finger hurt.
How?
I have people who can do it. We're from this planet, Belcour. We know it. Now, what do you have out here with you?
Nothing you can use. You're on your own. Mors is out here, and I think she knows everything. I need to find her quickly.
Belcour looked over at Ophem, and his anger boiled over.
You should have killed her in space, Syndulla! You should have killed them all! I gave you the damn idents! This could all be over!
Cham was silent for a beat, then said,
But it's not. Not yet. Is Mors on foot? Why do you think she knows everything?
Belcour ground his teeth, blinked away a blurriness of vision. He was losing control of himself, he realized, the same way he'd lost control of events. Mors is on a ship with 20 stormtroopers from the Equatorial Comm Hub. And I think she knows because she came here instead of the communication center. She's looking for Vader and the Emperor, too.
All right,
Cham said.
All right. Let me think a moment. Stand by.
Belcour, strapped into his seat and unable to pace, instead fidgeted with his uniform, his hat, his hair. He imagined Cham consulting with his people, figuring out the best way to back Belcour into a corner. Finally, Cham came back on the comlink.
Listen to me, Belcour. You're going to help us get Vader. Then, I'm going to help you get Mors. Then, this will all be over.
Belcour was breathing hard, trying not to look at Ophem's corpse.
Do you hear me, Belcour? Now, what do you have out here with you?
I'm, alone in the recon ship. But I've got 6 V-Wings checking the map grid for Mors. We're set up in a communication ladder.
Can you trust the crew in the V-Wings?
A laugh slipped through Belcour's teeth and he heard the hysteria in it.
To kill Mors?
Yes. I've made her out as the traitor who brought down the Perilous. But to kill Vader and the Emperor? No.
To help Twi'lek terrorists? No, I can't trust them to do that, Syndulla, no.
Right, so here's what we're going to do,
Cham said.
Keep your V-Wings in the air looking for Mors. If you or your men see her ship, shoot her down. But keep them in the comm ladder in case we need them. Throughout, keep within comm distance of me as we track Vader and the Emperor. Keep your communication ladder intact, because when I call for support, I'll want those V-Wings to come in hot.
They won't help you. Did you not hear me? And they won't fire on the Emperor.
Cham's voice finally lost its calm.
They won't know, Belcor! Not in the dark, not in this foliage!
The Twi'lek lowered his voice.
I'll give you coordinates, and you'll give them coordinates, and they'll come in firing. And only if I need them. Only if.
Belcor couldn't keep a sneer out of his tone.
Always planning for every contingency. One day you'll come up short, Syndulla.
Maybe, but not today, Belcor. Neither of us will. Not today.
I'm not putting my ships at your disposal, Twi'lek. Mors could leave the area and head back to the communication center. I could return there and find a security team waiting.
You're not thinking it through. She doesn't know how deep the conspiracy goes, so she came after the only people she can be sure aren't involved. Vader and the Emperor. She won't go anywhere until she has them. Trust me, Belcor. Help me get the Emperor. Then I'll make sure you get Mors.
Belcor heard the words, understood them even, but had no capacity to analyze them. He was exhausted, he knew. Too stressed to think clearly. He wasn't thinking things through. He wanted to pull back, start the day over, make different decisions. He didn't want to be responsible for the deaths of hundreds or thousands of Imperials aboard the Perilous. He didn't want a corpse in the seat next to him. He should eat a blaster shot. He knew he should, but he knew he didn't have it in him. Instead, he stared at the cockpit bubble, drew in a deep breath, and screamed until his voice was hoarse and he was out of breath. Let's just get this over with, Syndulla. Champ pocketed the encrypted comm link, frowning. He felt a measure of pity for Belcor. Cham had maneuvered him into a box, and there was no way out. There was no other end for Belcor but death. The only question was whether he faced an Imperial Inquisitor first. He shook his head, his leku waving. Phelan, you and Callan are to hop along at half-hour intervals behind us. I'll give you heading and distance. Don't lose us. We may need you for an extraction.
Understood.
They both said.
Belcor,
Isfahl asked him.
He's unstable, Cham said.
Yes,
Isfahl agreed. She checked the power packs on her blasters. He'll trail us in the recon ship, and if we need the V-Wings for a bombardment, we can call them in.
Vader downed two of our armed freighters and did it from the ground. I don't know if...
Cham interrupted her, his voice a bit sharper than he wished.
Do you have a better idea, Isfahl? I'm just doing what I can, using what resources I have. We're better off with the V-Wings than without, aren't we?
At first she recoiled from his tone, but her skin darkened and she stuck out her chin.
Yeah, we are.
She turned and walked away and Cham watched her go. He seemed always to be watching her go.
Gol, you ready?
Isfahl asked, holstering her blasters.
Ready,
the big Twi'lek said.
Cham and I are with you in the lead. The rest of your team in standard formation 20 meters behind. Let's move, people.
You heard her,
Gol called to his crew, and they nodded.
We stay quiet, people,
Cham said. To have their best chance, they'd need to catch Vader and the Emperor unawares. Isfahl, Gol, and Cham strode into the forest, Gol moving them along as quickly as he could while following Vader and the Emperor's path. Only after they were deep among the trees did Cham wonder if catching Vader unawares was actually possible. Mors flew the transport with one of Steen's officers co-piloting. Half of the stormtroopers and four more of Steen's men from the communications hub sat in the passenger compartment of the shuttle. Mors looked out on Ryloth's night. Two of the planet's moons had risen, ghostly crescents casting pale light on the carpet of treetops that swayed below. The dark expanse of the equatorial forest extended as far as Mors could see in all directions, broken often by clearings and deep ravines. The terrain intimidated Mors.
She flew a desk. She had no experience in search operations. Neither did Steen. Neither did any of them. With the aid of the NavComp, one of Steen's young officers had put together a search grid as well as he could. But the search area was vast, and Moores wasn't even entirely sure what she was looking for. A downed but mostly intact ship? A debris field? Survivors on foot? Bodies? So they searched slowly, with extra care, poring over the scan results and hoping to get lucky.
"Is that something?"
the co-pilot asked, pointing at signs of life on the scan. The middle-aged officer had a paunch and ears so large they stuck out like sails from under his cap.
"Fauna,"
Morris said, checking the scan.
"Big one. A lilac, probably. They're everywhere in the forests, I've heard."
The co-pilot sighed with impatience.
"More than 1,000 ships and pods went down from the Perilous. We haven't seen any. And we haven't seen any other search ships either. You'd think we wouldn't be able to fly 10 kilometers without bumping into one or the other, even if just by accident."
"You'd think wrong," Moore said. "It's a big planet, and the blast wave from the explosion would have dispersed the pods widely. They're scattered all over the Western Hemisphere. With communications down to line of sight, it's like being in a boat and trying to find 1,000 floating buoys scattered across an ocean. You could go days without finding anything or seeing another boat, and probably would. Frankly, we're just lucky to have a starting point."
"I suppose," said the co-pilot. He nodded out the cockpit. "Starting point or not, that's a lot of space down there, ma'am."
Moores could only nod. She knew she was looking at several 1,000 square kilometers of rough terrain that made scans slow and iffy. For the 10th time since leaving the communications hub behind, she wondered if she'd made a mistake in going after Vader and the Emperor. She wondered if she should have taken Steen and the stormtroopers and flown to the communications center, arrested Belcour, retaken control of operations, and then gone after Vader and the Emperor. Except that if Belcour's conspiracy ran deep among the command personnel, Moores would be killed on some pretext long before she ever reached the communications center. Or she would retake command, but in the time it took her to do so, Vader and the Emperor would be killed by the rebels who were also looking for them. No, her only course was to find Lord Vader and the Emperor first, then gather loyalist forces before attempting to move on Belcour. But to find them, she was going to have to be more lucky than skilled. She rubbed her tired eyes, stared out at the moon for a moment, and returned to the work of studying the scan results. Cham and Isfal kept several paces behind Gaul, letting the big Twi'lek do his work uninterrupted and without distraction. Gaul worked fast and in silence, save for grunting to himself from time to time as he examined the ground, a tree, leaves, the underbrush. He wore a perpetual frown throughout, the crease in his forehead as deep as one of the forest's ravines. He stopped with his hands on his hips as though to think or study something on the wind, then moved on. Cham hailed Phelan and Isfal and Belcour regularly so they could keep pace in their ships. He had one comm or another in his hand at all times.
"You might as well start juggling those things," Isfal said.
Cham smiled as he raised Phelan and Callan again to give them his location. He'd ordered them not to stay in the air any longer than they had to, as it would make them easier to pick up on the scans of any Imperial ships that might be in the area. He just needed them to stay within communication distance. Gaul suddenly stood upright, big head cocked to the side. He ran a hand down his right leku. He looked left, then right.
"What is..."
Isfal began, but Gaul silenced her with a raised hand. Signaling for them to wait, he walked ahead, his dim red light held close to the ground as he moved through the trees and underbrush. Isfal had no idea what he was looking at, but his tension was obvious from the hunch of his shoulders. Isfal was bunching her own shoulders on edge, holding her blasters too tightly.
She took a deep breath. A soft whistle from Gaul gave them the all-clear to proceed. Chairman Isfal found him standing at the edge of a clearing with his hands on his hips, staring ahead.
"See it?"
he asked when they stood at his side. The clearing extended on past the limits of Isfal's night vision. "I'm looking at a clearing," she said. "What am I supposed to see?"
"It wasn't a clearing a short time ago. See all the broken limbs, the churned soil, the toppled trees?"
Once Gaul pointed them out, the features were obvious.
"A horde,"
Cham said.
"Yes, it was," Gaul said softly. "And I'd wager they were after the Emperor's group. Timing's right."
"Lilacs,"
Isfal said, awed by the number of them it must have taken to cut such a large swath out of the forest. "They'd have trampled everything along their way. How can we follow Vader now?"
"The horde obliterated the human tracks," Gaul said. "But once a horde is after you, it almost always catches you. So we just follow the horde."
"And what if we find it?"
Isfal asked. She'd never seen a lilac up close and had no desire to change that.
"Better question is, what if we don't?"
Cham said, leaving the implication dangling there. Isfal took his meaning. If Vader and the Emperor could handle a lilac horde, it was difficult to imagine a group of Twi'lek freedom fighters presenting much trouble.
"We're in too far to stop now," she said.
"Yeah, and that's what I keep saying about Belcor," Cham reminded her, and that brought her up short.
"If we run into a horde, we're all dead."
Gaul grunted agreement.
"Even so,"
Isfal said, thinking of Pak and Eshko and Drim and everyone else who died at the hands of Vader and the Empire.
"Even so."
She stared at Cham, trying to will him into making the right call. A long moment passed before Gaul spoke again.
"So what are we doing, Cham?"
"Following the horde,"
Cham said, and gestured at the trail the lilacs had made through the forest floor.
"We're in too far to stop now."
Chapter 16 Vader enveloped himself in the Force, let it saturate him, and through it magnified and channeled his omnipresent rage and hate. Beside him, the Emperor too unbridled his power and sank into the Force. As one, they leapt down from the mouth of the tunnel. The moment they hit the floor, the lilacs swarmed forward, hundreds of them, a wave of spiked limbs and clicking mandibles. They raised their upper bodies as they charged, freeing themselves to use their spiked front legs like spears. They climbed over one another in their eagerness to kill and feed. Vader extended a gloved hand and loosed a blast of power that blew apart two of the lilacs rushing toward him, showering those behind with gore and chunks of carapace. At the same time, his master unleashed a destructive wave of power that cast three of the huge creatures backward and into the wall, cracking exoskeletons and leaving them broken, twitching, dying. Vader rushed forward, blade held high. He ducked a tentacle, sidestepped the stab of a spiked leg, and with a crosscut, severed the head from a lilac as it lunged at him. Crushing the skull under his boot, he used the Force to propel the headless carcass into a trio of the creatures behind it, turning them into a knot of legs and tentacles and chittering. Feeling danger behind, he spun and lopped off the two front legs of another lilac that was poised to impale him through the back. He leapt atop its flailing, skittering body, riding it for a time while his blade slashed and stabbed at its fellows. He ended the creature's squeals of pain by driving his blade down and through its abdomen. Bounding off its back, he rushed among the seething mass of lilacs, heedless now of their stabbing limbs and biting teeth, his lightsaber severing legs, tentacles, heads, mandibles, covering the floor in ichor-soaked body parts.
impacts from the tentacles and legs and hulking bodies barely moved him. None penetrated his armor, and what little pain they managed to inflict could not surpass the pain he carried always within him. A spiked leg caught him squarely, slammed hard into his side, and drove him sideways into the tentacles of another lilac, which immediately wrapped around his legs and lifted him upside down from the floor. While he hung there, another lilac lunged forward, mouth open wide as though to snap off his head. He drove his lightsaber into its open mouth and out the back of its head, and it fell dead to the floor. The creature holding him drew him toward its own mouth, but he simply bent at the waist and severed the tentacle holding him. He flipped in midair as he fell, landed on his feet, spun, and severed the forelegs from a lilac before him. It collapsed, screeching and spraying ichor from the stumps, its huge body thumping into him in its pained spasms. The impact of its bulk knocked him backward, but he rode the motion into a spinning crosscut that bisected another lilac's head. He'd killed dozens, a score or more, yet still, they kept coming. The press of them restricting his movement, buffeting him, spiked legs slamming into the floor all around him. Roaring, he dodged and jumped and spun through them, his blade slashing and stabbing, until a blow from a tentacle caught him flush in the chest and sent him careening backward. The creature that had struck him followed up, tentacles grasping, jaws clicking, the spears of its forelegs raised high. Meanwhile, the spiked leg from another lilac slammed into his back. His armor prevented the limb from skewering him, but the impact drove him back toward the charging lilac. Stumbling, Vader nevertheless held out a hand, channeled the force, and loosed a blast of power that slammed the charging creature 5 meters backward into the wall. Wanting a moment to gather himself and check on his master, he jumped high above the teeming mass of lilacs to a ledge 5 meters up on the wall, using the force to augment his leap. The creatures he had just escaped gnashed their mandibles, waved their tentacles, and tried to climb over one another in their frustration as they scrabbled at the side of the wall. From above, back near the tunnel mouth, Vader heard the shouts of the guards and the rapid whumps of repeated blaster fire. An explosion boomed, a grenade, causing the walls to vibrate. Vader called on the force, leapt, and propelled himself up to the mouth of the tunnel. Deez and the captain had both taken a knee, blaster rifles planted on their shoulders as they fired into the lilacs trying to advance down the tunnel toward them. Vader casually loosed a blast of power down the tunnel mouth, destroying the leading lilacs and pushing half a dozen more backward. Seeing Vader, the captain shouted,
"Where is the Emperor?"
Deez just kept firing. Vader turned and looked down to the floor below, where his master, surrounded by a dozen or more lilacs, was spinning, whirling, leaping, his lightsaber moving so fast it blurred. He looked tiny amid their bulk, but moved with preternatural speed, his blade stabbing and slashing and severing. He was laughing, the familiar cackle somehow audible above the sounds of the horde. But then, a score or more of lilacs lurched at him at once from all sides, leaping and climbing over one another, their tentacles a squirming net, their claws slashing, their massive chitinous bodies blocking him from Vader's view. A thought flashed through Vader's mind, a stray thought, just for a moment. His master dead. Vader ruling the Empire, the galaxy, unconstrained by the leash of an old man. He killed the thought, leapt from the mouth of the tunnel, flipped in midair, and landed hard atop one of the lilacs. It bucked, tentacles squirming. He drove his blade down through its back and out its abdomen, killing it. Tentacles reached for him from the left and right, and a third lilac reared up over its dead kin to get at him. But he vaulted from the carcass on which he stood and onto the back of another lilac, a meter away. Again he drove his lightsaber down and through it.
"Master!"
he shouted, still unable to see the Emperor in the press of the creatures. A blast of power from somewhere under the throng of creatures drove four Lilacs 10 meters into the air, their bodies shattered by the force of the impact, limbs and tentacles showering down in a macabre rain. His master stood in the center of the circle of surviving Lilacs, his hair mussed, his robe torn, his lightsaber in hand, but otherwise seemingly unharmed. Vader leapt down to his master's side. They took position back to back.
Master.
Lord Vader.
His master responded and chuckled.
Enjoyable, no? Did you consider allowing me to die to realize your own ambitions?
Vader didn't even attempt to lie.
I did, but only for a moment.
Good. Very good.
As if on command, the Lilacs surged toward them from all sides. As one, Vader and his master channeled the force and unleashed blasts of power that slammed into the advancing creatures, shattering several and casting 6 or 7 hard against the walls. Still, the Lilacs came on, chittering and grasping and slashing. Vader and his master stood back to back in the center of the press, their lightsabers murderous red lines that Lilac limbs and tentacles and bodies could not pass. The carcasses piled up around them, a mountain of the dead, and still they came on. Soon both of them were covered in gore, lost in the force, in their unbridled ability to kill. Vader sensed the new danger a moment before it materialized. A Lilac from somewhere in the rear of the surviving mass sprang high over the others toward him and his master, chittering, the spikes of its legs aimed forward as though to impale. Vader answered the creature's leap with a force-augmented leap of his own, wielding his lightsaber in a two-handed grip, intercepting the creature in midair and cutting it in two with the red streak of his blade. He landed atop a dead Lilac and immediately bounded back to his master's side. He hit the floor in a crouch, expecting to be swarmed by the remaining Lilacs, but instead found them backing away from him. He soon saw why. They were making way for the approach of the Queen.
You perceive the smaller danger, but not the larger, his master said. Here it is now.
The quiet of the forest unnerved Isfahan. It seemed the Lilac horde had stripped it of life, or that all the creatures in it were waiting in pensive silence for whatever terrible thing might come next. The swath the Lilacs had cut through the terrain would have struck her as impossible had she not seen it for herself. Uprooted trees, shattered trunks, undergrowth pounded into the dirt, and yet she knew that within a month it would be overgrown and gone, as if nothing had ever happened. There were lessons in that, she thought. She and Shem hustled along beside Gaul, who covered ground rapidly with the path so easy to follow. Gaul's team trailed them, the sound of their bouncing gear and equipment loud in the quiet. Chewing up the kilometers gave Isfahan time to consider the end game.
What do we expect to find here?
Isfahan asked Shem.
Bodies?
Shem shrugged, looked at Gaul.
If the Lilacs caught them, there won't be anything left of the bodies, Gaul said. But there will be signs of a feeding frenzy. That'll tell us all we need to know.
The thought of Vader and the Emperor being torn apart by a hungry pack of Ryloth's chief predatory animal seemed fitting somehow. Still, Isfahan had seen the things Vader could do. Things that no one should have been able to do.
And if there was no feeding frenzy, she asked, if they escaped...
No one escapes on foot, Gaul said.
Isfahan was not so sure. Within the half hour, they found the first of the Lilac carcasses. The huge body lay in the undergrowth, its head missing.
Isfahan eyed the body, which seemed all edges and spikes and points, covered in a dry, chitinous exoskeleton that looked like weathered stone and was probably sturdier than armor.
Its tentacles were rubbery lengths thicker around than her arm.
Blaster shot, Gaul said, examining the stump of the Lilac's neck. See the charring? About the only way a blaster brings one of these down.
If they killed the entire horde, could you pick the trail back up?
Gaul looked at him in disbelief.
Tram, killing one lilac is one thing. Maybe just a lucky shot. But wiping out a horde with a blaster while on foot? That's like trying to kill a sandstorm. It's a force of nature. It'll consume you and barely know you're there.
Could you pick the trail back up, Gaul?
Yes, I think. Lot of variables, of course, but...
Good,
Champ said. Soon they found more carcasses, all of them headshot. Getting closer, Gaul said softly.
Stay sharp.
They came to the edge of a ravine, and all three of them stopped cold.
They looked down into it for a long time, staring in shocked silence. Gaul broke the quiet with a soft curse. Dozens of lilac carcasses lay scattered about the bottom and walls of the ravine. A number of them headshot, but some other force had destroyed the rest. Legs were broken and twisted, exoskeletons shattered and cracked. One carcass lay half buried in the hillside on the opposite side of the ravine. Gaul surveyed the scene, the usual furrow back in his brow.
The horde didn't come out of the ravine, he said. Lilac's nest underground. This must be an entry point.
He didn't sound certain to Isval. Probably a lot of holes leading down to the nest all along that side of the ravine.
But I don't...
Was there a feeding frenzy here?
Cham asked. Isval knew the answer before Gaul said it.
I don't... No, I don't think so, he said.
Come on.
Isval hesitated a moment as a mental image formed in her brain of lilacs bubbling up out of holes in the ground, trapping them in the bottom of the ravine.
Stay up here and cover the approaches, she said to Gaul's people, who lined the edge of the ravine, staring down in wonder.
Stay sharp,
Gaul ordered them, and started down the side of the ravine, using what remained of the undergrowth to keep his footing as he descended. Cham and Isval followed. The creek that once ran through the ravine had been churned into a paste of mud ichor by the lilac horde. Eyeing the carcasses of the dead, Isval could not imagine what Vader and the Emperor had done to break apart the lilac so thoroughly.
Grenades?
Gaul asked, though Isval saw no sign of charring or burning.
Must be something we haven't seen,
Cham said.
These are apex predators, Gaul said in disbelief. We fortify our cities out of fear of facing a handful of these. And this group of four, facing a horde on foot? These are apex predators, he repeated.
Vader is the apex predator,
Isval thought but didn't dare say aloud. Gaul studied the churned dirt around what appeared to be a collapsed tunnel entrance. A massive tangle of tree roots and the hind end of a lilac stuck out of the rubble, the rest of it buried under the collapse.
A lot of activity around this tunnel, Gaul said, studying the ground, like they were trying to get at something in there. Probably Vader and his group retreated into this tunnel, then collapsed it behind them to cut off pursuit.
He backed off, looking up, left and right.
There will be a lot of other tunnels nearby that lead down into the nest. The whole hill is probably riddled with them, going down a long way. They wouldn't have escaped by collapsing this tunnel. The lilacs would have come at them from another tunnel.
You're telling us Vader is underground?
Cham said.
I'm telling you he went underground, Gaul said. Probably the rest of the horde did too.
What remains of it?
Isval said, looking at the carcasses.
If they come out, Cham asked, will they have to come out here?
That's a big if, Cham.
But if they do,
Isval persisted.
Gaul shook his head. I've seen computer models of lilac nests. They're labyrinthine. There are scores of entry and exit points. If the Emperor and Vader somehow manage to stay alive down there,
They could come out anywhere within, say, a 10-kilometer radius of here. Sorry, Cham. I think we just lost them. Cham's skin darkened, a sign of his frustration. Isfah was clenching a fist. Cham activated his comlink.
Kallan, Phelan, we think Vader and the Emperor are underground. They may come up anywhere within a 15-kilometer radius of our current location. Get up in the air and start a scan. You find anything at all, sound off immediately.
If there are any ships out here, they could detect us,
Kallan told him.
I know, Champ said. But do it.
After Kallan and Phelan acknowledged the order, Cham took the encrypted comm link he used with Belcor and repeated the same thing. Isfah could only hear Cham's half of the conversation.
They could be Belcor, but I doubt it.
Cham looked at the many dead lilacs, the collapsed tunnel.
You're not seeing what I'm seeing here. Just get up in the air and scan.
I know.
Just do it.
He cut the connection.
They could already be out and on the move, Cham.
Gaul pointed out, that 10-click estimate is just an estimate.
I realize that,
Cham said and cleared his throat.
Options. What else do we have?
Gaul shrugged.
We could go down after them,
Isfah offered. That is not an option, Gaul said.
We don't have gear for that, and it's too dangerous,
Cham said. None of us would come out, Gaul said. I guarantee that. Isfah's irritation with the situation boiled over into anger at Gaul.
Are you also guaranteeing that Vader won't come out then? That they're dead down there?
Gaul put his hands on his hips, looked around at all the dead lilacs, and shook his head.
Not after seeing this, no. I don't know what could kill them if not this.
His admission deflated the bubble of Isfah's anger. Gaul looked up at the sky through the openings in the forest's thick canopy.
Winds bringing rain. Smell it?
As if on cue, thunder rumbled.
What kind of men are we after here, Cham? Gaul asked. This is like nothing I've ever seen or even heard of.
Cham just shook his head, Leku waving. Isfah had only the one answer, and she still wouldn't say it out loud.
Apex predators. That's what kind of men they were after.
Vader and the Emperor stood in the shadow of the Queen's towering form. Her respiration was audible in the sudden lull, loud and wet. Each of her six legs was a meter and a half in circumference, and the spikes they ended in looked like sword blades. Her swarming tentacles, four instead of two, were 10 meters long, as thick as a man's waist, and ended in glistening points of chitin that leaked some kind of ichor or perhaps poison. Her mouth could easily bite a person in half. She advanced slowly, tentacles squirming, the ends of her legs striking the ground with a clipped staccato rhythm. She lowered her head and hissed as she came on. Her mandibles worked the empty air. Vader's master wore the same knowing half-smile he seemed always to wear.
Shall we begin, Lord Vader?
Vader answered only with the sound of his breathing. The queen exploded into motion, and so too did Vader and the Emperor. A tentacle lashed at Vader and he leapt over it, sidestepping a second tentacle, and chopped down with his blade. He missed as the queen snapped the tentacle back, his blade putting a charred furrow in the stone of the floor. He leapt high over her, flipping at the apex of his trajectory, and as he descended he took his blade into a two-handed grip and pointed it downward to impale her. She lurched sidewise and lashed out with a tentacle, which struck him squarely and knocked him to the floor. She turned as though to advance on him, but his master sprang before her, jumping, twirling, and ducking under the rapid swings of her tentacles and the spikes of her legs. His lightsaber slashed rapidly at every opening, striking the tentacles, but scarring them only, not severing them. The queen lunged toward his master and he flipped backward, landing a few paces away. Vader jumped to his feet,
spinning out of the way of her attempt to stab him with the chitinous spike at the end of one of her tentacles. He found himself face to face with five lilacs, all of them hissing, tentacles squirming. He stabbed one through the head, backflipped high over another, hit the ground, and severed its rear legs. To his right, his master gestured, and with the force, lifted two of the lilacs from the floor. Vader and his master exchanged no words, but each knew precisely what the other intended. With a casual throwing motion, the Emperor flung the two lilacs in Vader's direction, their legs and tentacles squirming, bellies exposed. Slashing and turning a rapid spin, Vader bisected both of them. The four gory pieces that remained fell to the floor in a heap. From above, blaster shots slammed into the lilac that remained before him, with several shots bouncing off its carapace before one finally caught it in the head and put it down. Vader glanced up to see Deez kneeling in the tunnel's mouth, blaster rifle lowered, firing down into the melee. Vader reflexively slashed with his lightsaber as another lilac scrabbled toward him. The blade took off the legs and left the creature squealing and spasming. He saw his master dodging the rapid, repeated strikes of the queen's tentacles. The Emperor twisted and spun and leapt, slashing with his lightsaber where he could, and where the blade bit into the thick tentacles, it opened black gashes that leaked a thick ichor. The pain seemed only to make her angrier. Vader leapt high and landed at his master's side. The queen roared and loosed a flurry of strikes. Working in tandem, they parried her blows, counterstruck, opened dozens of holes in her tentacles, their blades spinning blurs before them. Her very bulk slowly pushed them backward, and from time to time, they had to turn their attention to a lilac that rushed them or tried to jump them from the side. Moving almost as one, the two Sith lords turned and spun around an unspoken central point, parrying, slashing, killing. Frustrated, the queen rushed toward them with surprising speed. Her huge body slammed into them both, knocking them backward. Quick as a lightning strike, she struck with snapping mandibles. The Emperor fell flat to the floor to avoid the bite, and she slammed her legs down at him like so many pikes, each blow chipping the stone of the floor. He rolled and spun underneath the mountain of her body while Vader slashed at her tentacles, the ichor from her many wounds spraying in all directions. She was trying simply to smash his master with her mass, but Vader perceived her intent, raised a hand, and held her up, straining, grunting for the fraction of a moment that it took for his master to roll out from under her. And then they were at her again, their blades humming and cutting. She hissed, wounded tentacles flailing, legs stomping, and bounded backward in a crouch.
Emperor!
Dee shouted from above and fired at the queen as rapidly as he could pull the trigger. The shots bounced off her carapace and ricocheted wildly around the chamber. Vader used his lightsaber to deflect one into the face of the lilac nearest him, killing it. Beside him, his master split the head of a lilac that lunged at him. Vader decided to finish matters.
Master,
he said, and nothing more.
Go,
the Emperor said. Vader sprinted forward and leapt high. The moment he reached the apex of his jump, his master seized him with the force and flung him the rest of the way so that he landed atop the queen's back. Immediately, she bucked, tentacles flailing, and he drove his lightsaber down into her back. To his surprise, the blade only bit partially and then slipped to the side. She screamed and hissed with agony. He grasped it two-handed again, preparing another blow, but she reared up hard, bucking, and flung him to the floor. He landed near his master, who grabbed him by the arm and heaved him to his feet with uncanny strength. She whirled around at them and whipped her tentacles at Vader and his master, following with a lunge forward and a vicious bite at Vader. They sidestepped her attacks, once more falling into their usual rhythm, and cross-cut at her head with their lightsabers. Both blades struck home. The Emperor tore a long gash in the armored exoskeleton of her head, and Vader destroyed one eye. She shrieked and reared backward, eye socket leaking gore, tentacles whipping wildly. Dees continued to pour down fire at her, but the shots appeared to do her little or no harm. Still, the distress of their queen drove the remaining Lilacs into a frenzy, and they charged from all sides. Vader